But we're going to get things started with Carmen Maria Machado. Machado's debut short story collection is called Her Body and Other Parties. It was a finalist for the National Book Award. Carmen's stories map the realities of women's lives and the violence that is visited upon their bodies. These stories destroy the boundaries between psychological realism and fantasy. Her stories may remind you of Kelly Link's fiction, and that's not surprising since Carmen says that reading Link's short story collection, Magic for Beginners, totally rearranged her DNA.
Before I read Magic for Beginners, I didn't really have a sense of, like, I sort of knew what I wanted to write about as a writer. I feel like to be a writer, you have to figure out, like, what it is that you want to say with your work and also how you want to do it. And I sort of knew what I wanted to write about. Like, I knew that I had this interest in gender and sexuality and, like, these were things I wanted to write about. But I had no sense of my style or what mode of telling would sort of most serve these ambitions. And so when I read Magic for Beginners, I remember thinking to myself, like, it's this, you know, really sort of giddy mix of metafiction and sort of genre mashing. It's like horror and fantasy and science. It's like everything.
Yeah, and hasn't it been described, I think maybe not by Kelly Link, but by one of her critics as kitchen sink surrealism?
Oh, I don't think I've ever heard that expression, but that totally makes sense.
Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's different kinds of ways to think about genre, and one of them, right, is like these sort of sets of rules and tropes. But the thing about Kelly Link's work and the writing that I most love is that it sort of moves very freely between these categories and sort of defies these sort of, yeah, these easy sort of boxes. And Kelly's work did that. And I remember reading it thinking, you can do that? You can do that? What? And there was something so freeing about that. And I remember returning to my work that I was working on at the time and suddenly having a sense of how I wanted to tell my, not my story, but like how I wanted to write my stories, like how I wanted to tell them. And then everything kind of just opened up after that in this way that was really amazing. So I'd say she helped me like find my voice, I guess.
Yeah. The first story in your book, Her Body and Other Parties, is called The Husband Stitch. Where did the inspiration for this story come from?
I have an aunt who is an OBGYN nurse. And one time years ago, I guess when I was in grad school, I was visiting my family and I was chatting with her and she mentioned this phrase, the husband stitch, which I had never heard before. And I said, you know, what is that? And she was like, well, you know, women come in, give birth, they have episiotomies. And then when they're getting sort of stitched back up, the husbands will sort of jokingly ask for this like extra stitch to tighten them up. And I was like, well, that's the most horrifying thing I've ever heard in my entire life. But the phrase, the husband stitch, had this sort of poetry to it that I found very compelling. And so I just sort of jotted it down. And I do a lot of note taking and list making for ideas. So oftentimes when I'm writing stories, I'm sort of filtering through, I'm digging through my lists, seeing if there's something in there that I've already thought of that might complement the idea that I'm having in some way. So I had also sort of separately had an idea about retelling the urban legend of the girl with the green ribbon around her neck, which I had read as a child and had really affected me. And then I also separately had an idea about a woman, sort of a mid-century housewife who really enjoys sex. And then I separately had an idea about writing a story about urban legends in general and sort of myths and you know, something very Angela Carter-esque, I guess, was what I was thinking. And so when I sat down, I was up in this cabin and I was like doing some work and I was looking through all my notes and I was like, oh, like these pieces all connect to each other. This title and concept, these two women are sort of the same person. And I sort of just like realized that I had been writing the story, you know, over a couple of years. I had sort of jotted down these like major points in my lists and then I just sort of drew them together and the rest is history.
Now would be the perfect time to have you read an excerpt from The Husband Stitch. And could you set it up if you think it needs setup?
Oh, yeah. So I'm reading a little bit into the very beginning of the story, and the protagonist has just sort of explained to the reader that she's met this boy at a party as a young woman and that she's very attracted to him. I have imagined a lot of things in the dark, in my bed, beneath the weight of that old quilt, but never this, and I moan. When he pulls away, he seems startled. His eyes dart around for a moment before settling on my throat. What's that? He asks. Oh, this. I touch the ribbon at the back of my neck. It's just my ribbon. I run my fingers halfway around its green and glossy length and bring them to rest on the tight bow that sits in the front. He reaches out his hand, and I seize it and press it away. "You shouldn't touch it," I say. "You can't touch it." Before we go inside, he asks if he can see me again. I tell him that I would like that. That night before I sleep, I imagine him again, his tongue pushing open my mouth, and my fingers slide over myself, and I imagine him there, all muscle and desire to please, and I know that we are going to marry.
You write a lot about sex in your fiction. Why?
There's a few answers. The first is it's fun. I like it. I'd be lying if I said I did not enjoy it. I often tell my students when they're feeling stuck with a story to write party scenes, because party scenes are really good ways to like bring a lot of characters together, sort of cause sparks to fly, cause conflict, have some bad behavior, and can sort of launch the story into these new spaces. And I feel like sex scenes are actually very similar in that way, where you're sort of bringing people together and like creating this space where a lot of unexpected elements can occur. Mm-hmm. On this more like a sort of intimate and personal level than necessarily like a party scene. I enjoy reading about sex. Mm-hmm. Like reading literary fiction with sex scenes, it's often men, straight men, who get to write that way. And, you know, usually women themselves are sort of demeaned and reduced in this way that's not interesting or sexy. And so I decided that I wanted to write stories with women, queer women and women. They're all queer in my mind. Some of them do not have sex with women. But, you know, women having sex and just sort of living their lives, and the sex sometimes being great and sometimes being okay and sometimes being bad, but being a lot of things at once. And yeah, I don't know. It's just interesting to me as an artist. And I'm just, I don't know, I'm really invested in it. Yeah. As a thing. And it's like funny because, you know, I did it and everyone comes to me and they always ask me that question. Like, why do you do this? And it's like, because you have to, because you're asking that question, right? Clearly that's a space that needs filling, no pun intended.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One of the things that I'm really struck by in your work is the wealth of concrete visual details you give the reader in your fiction. It gives your stories this really strong cinematic quality. So I'm wondering, are you a visual thinker?
I am. Actually, I was a photography major in college.
Oh, okay.
So I'm very visual. It's funny, though, because I basically I'm still paying off my student loans and I just have a really nice Instagram account. That's like the way that degree has manifested, which is not super helpful to me. But, you know, I am a very visual thinker, and I feel like a lot of times the way that my mind sort of categorizes things and observes things is very physical, very concrete. So I think that's just the way my brain works, honestly.
Yeah. The writer Lydia Yuknovich has said that she thinks you might have broke the mold for short story collections. And I think that your story, Especially Heinous, is a great example of this mold breaking. Can you tell me a bit about Especially Heinous?
People who love that story or absolutely hate it. Like, there's just no one feels like indifferently about it. They're just like, oh, it's the greatest story ever written, or it's terrible and I hate it. You know, and, you know, it's funny. We mentioned, to go back to the beginning of our conversation, like we were talking about Kelly Link and Magic for Beginners. The title story of that collection is a story about television and about fandom and about sort of engaging with TV. And so I was in grad school. I probably was just watching Law & Order SVU, as I often find myself doing. And I was thinking a lot about like episode capsule descriptions, so the kind you would see on like Wikipedia or IMDb.
Yeah.
The genre of that, right? Like, what does it mean to sort of sum up like an entire episode of television? There's like a couple of sentences. And I sort of took a couple from the beginning and I tried to play around with them a little bit. So I tried to sort of manipulate them so that the existing text became sort of warped in this interesting way and sort of suggested this sort of surreal something. And I was like, I could write a whole story this way. So I sort of played around with them for a while. And then what I realized a couple episodes in was like, that sticking to the actual episode description is actually too restrictive. Like, it didn't give me enough freedom as a writer. And I also decided to like stick to the first 12 seasons of the show because A, the show is still going on, and what at the time was also still going on. But I also was interested in Benson and Stabler as a sort of unit, the two main detectives in the show. And Stabler left the show after season 12. So I was like, okay, 12, it's like this perfect sort of, you know, very biblical number.
Yeah, right. That's true.
So I decided to just like stick with the 12 seasons. I just started using the episode titles, which were all these like single words.
Oh, and those are the actual episode titles?
They are, yeah.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, all the episode titles that you see in the story are the actual episode titles. Though, funnily enough, I actually, I'm currently in the process of getting translated, and translators find typos like no one's business. Uh-huh. And actually a translator found a typo where I don't know who did it. It was me. Somebody at some point in the process, somebody like switched a letter. And so an episode, I think the episode is called Freed and it became Greed or the other way around.
Oh,
like
okay.
It got inverted.
Right, yeah.
So that one, actually, the title's incorrect. But generally speaking, they're the actual titles from the show.
Cool.
And so I just like use those as like jumping off points
It's a very cool story, and I'm one of the kind of people I love that story, and I think it's fair to say that with this story you've kind of invented the literary equivalent of binge watching, binge reading. What do you
think? I definitely
think?
Was sort of interested in that as a concept, because the idea of like, what does it mean to like sit down and watch like an entire show in like a day or 2 days or whatever, like that sort of feeling of like indulgence. And I sort of, I wanted to reproduce that in the story.
Let's have you read an excerpt from Especially Heinous.
Yeah. Honor. Stabler dreams that a man at a Renaissance fair insults Stabler's wife, and Stabler punches him in his self-satisfied face. When Stabler wakes up, he decides to tell his wife the story. He rolls over. She is gone. Stabler has never been to a Renaissance fair. Closure, part two. It's not that I hate men, the woman says. I'm just terrified of them, and I'm okay with that fear. Legacy. Over breakfast, Stabler's daughter asked him about Benson's family. Stabler says that Benson doesn't have a family. You always say that family is man's one true wealth, says Stabler's daughter. Stabler thinks about this. It's true, he says, but Benson is not a man.
This story reminded me a lot of David Lynch, especially with its detectives, doppelgangers, and the girls with bells for eyes. It kind of had like a Mulholland Drive vibe to me. I'm curious, is Lynch an influence on your work at all?
I love David Lynch. If I was going to pick someone whose work I was the most interested in my writing being like, he would definitely be on that list for sure.
You seem very fearless as a writer. Is there anything that you are afraid to write about?
I definitely think that I am afraid of certain topics and certain things. Like right now, I'm sort of trying to dive into one of my biggest fears, which is writing historical fiction. And I'm actually writing an entire book that's almost entirely historical fiction. So that is me sort of trying headfirst to like dive into that problem. Yeah. And I'm writing a memoir that really scares me right now that is coming out next year. And it's due to my publisher at the end of this year. And I'm really freaked out by it. So yeah, I'm definitely afraid of things. But I also think that fear, what you're afraid of as a writer, is sort of a good, it's a good place to aim for. When you do that, you realize something, your brain is telling you something. If you're afraid to go for something, then you should definitely dive into it, because that's where all the interesting stuff is going to be happening.
Exactly. That's especially true for the horror. There's a lot of horror aesthetic to a lot of your work, so that's especially important to do that.
Yeah.
I'd read somewhere that you were afraid of writing about race.
Yeah, that too. So I am a non-white woman who presents as white. And so my own relationship with race is something that I think about a lot. I'm interested in writing about it, but I want to do it right. I've been trying to figure it out. So one of the stories in this historical book that I'm writing does sort of deal with race in this way, and is sort of the first time I've ever sort of done that in like an explicit way. That sort of question of like, what are you or who are you, and how does that relate to how you look and who you are and your identity, is actually like part of the narrative itself.
You've said in interviews that you're not writing for men and you're not writing for straight people. So I'm a straight male. Do you think that means that there are things that I'm not getting out of your stories that I would if I were, say, a bi woman?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Can you give me an example of what I'm not getting out of the stories?
No.
Okay.
There's this thing that people don't think about sufficiently, which is like, everything is not for you and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which does not mean that you can't read something and enjoy it.
Yeah, which I do.
Right. If you're like missing stuff, you know, or there's stuff that you don't quite, you know, like a joke you don't quite understand, or like a space you don't quite occupy, that's okay. Like you can just you just have to learn to be comfortable with not knowing everything and not having everything be for you.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. You recently had a moment on Twitter where you stood up to the renowned author Junot Diaz, and you maybe even unintentionally kind of served as a spokesperson about that. Can you tell me a bit about that?
I don't really want to talk about that very much, only because, you know, I think I've said what I have to say about it. I also think it's not really about me, and I sort of want to make sure that conversation is directed toward women who specifically he victimized. You know, I had this interaction with him. It was very unpleasant. I think it said a lot about who he is as a person, as an artist. But I think I've already said everything I kind of have to say about it. So, yeah.
Yeah. And final question. You've said that every story, book, or project is a problem that the author is trying to solve. So was there a problem? Can you identify a problem that you were trying to solve with the 8 stories that make up Her Body and Other Parties?
You know, they sort of say that the first book you write, or I've heard it said, I guess, I don't know who they are, but I've heard it said that the first book you write is sort of the book that you've been storing up in your body, like, your whole life, right? And, like, it's all the sort of the summation of all the stuff that, like, you've been thinking about, you know, in your living memory and, like, having a space for that. And I think that this book helped me sort of answer questions about how do I exist in the world as a woman, as a fat person, as a queer person, like, how do I occupy my own space? And, like, how do I give myself that space? And how do I take that space? And I figured some stuff out, which is, like, such a strange thing to say. It's like, sometimes you go into a story being like, here's what I have to say. But sometimes you go in being like, I have a question. Like, how do I think about my body in this way? Or, like, how do I talk about fatness? Or how do I talk about the husband stitch, sort of the question at the center of it is, what do we do with the misogyny of good men? And, you know, trying to figure those questions out. And I think that by writing those stories, I managed to get at some kind of thesis. And I think that's really going to help me as an artist, as a thinker, like, move forward in my work.
Carmen Maria Machado is the author of the award-winning short story collection, Her Body and Other Parties. You can find out more about Carmen and her book at wpr.org/beta. We'd love to know what you think of the show. Just send us an email at beta@wpr.org.